So Mr. Emerson, good morning to you.
Good morning. Mr. Patrick Turner of our Omaha office was going to introduce me to the court. He realized last night he had a hearing in bankruptcy courts. Just appear without that introduction.
You may so appear.
May it please the court. The standard for the grant of summary judgment, which was entered in this case at the trial court level, is well known to the court, and I will not do it. It's covered in both parties' briefs. The central issue, we believe, is whether Judge Burns, the central issue before Judge Burns was whether or not the record contains sufficient evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs to raise a genuine issue of material fact or an inference that M&D Trucking, the defendant in the case below, was acting as a motor carrier with respect to the load in question. M&D concedes throughout its appellate briefs that its defense rests on the claim that it was acting solely as a broker for the load in issue and not as a motor carrier. But we believe the record contained very substantial evidence that M&D was in fact acting as a freight as a motor carrier. And there are two main sources for those facts. The first is the statement of additional facts that was contained in the plaintiff's opposition to M&D's motion for summary judgment. There were 32 separate and discrete paragraphs of facts, all supported by deposition testimony, by contracts, by the shipping documents themselves, and by discovery responses. That evidence established, for example, the fact that M&D is an authorized motor carrier, that M&D had a contract with Turbo Turtle, which gave M&D the exclusive right for 5 years to dispatch Turbo Turtle's equipment and its drivers, whether they were characterized as independent contractors or as employees.
Was that a lease agreement?
Yes,
between
sir.
M&D and Turbo Turtle?
Yeah, it's entitled a dispatch agreement, but under the terms of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act, it is deemed to be a lease agreement. And when you read the agreement itself, it clearly is a lease agreement.
What are they leasing?
I'm sorry?
What's M&D leasing?
Both
trucks,
the
drivers?
The trucks, trailers, and the drivers, both the equipment and the personnel.
Who maintained the trucks?
It depended on the owner. In this case, they were maintained by Turbo Turtle.
Did M&D maintain the vehicles?
No, it did not.
Did they have any obligation to do so?
Well, it had not under the lease agreement, had obligations under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act regulations to maintain them in proper running order.
Because they were leasing?
Yes.
As Nebraska adopted the insurance, the lease provisions from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulation?
There is no statute specifically adopting those, no.
They specifically did not adopt that provision out of the federal regulations, didn't they?
I don't believe they specifically adopted or did not adopt them. Nebraska law is silent on that.
Okay.
M&D under the lease agreement had the right to control at least one of Turbo Turtle's independent operators at all times, and there's no evidence that did so with respect to any of the independent operators other than Mr. Johnson. The contract further prohibited M&D from, the contract between M&D and NORAG, the shipper, prohibited shipment by any other carrier other than M&D unless M&D obtained written permission from NORAG to do so. M&D never told NORAG that any of the loads would be transported by another shipper, and it never told them that Turbo Turtle would be transporting any of the shipments. The evidence of record was that NORAG routinely hired M&D to transport loads of fracking sand, and in fact, it hired M&D to transport 70-some loads of fracking sand, including the load in question. NORAG never had any contract with Turbo Turtle. NORAG's load list designated M&D as the motor carrier. The bill of lading for the particular shipment in question designated M&amp;D as the motor carrier for that shipment.
Who prepared the bill of lading?
It was prepared by the quarry that loaded the sand. NORAG dispatched Mr. Johnson and had repeated conversations with him the night prior to the accident while he was en route to deliver the fracking sand.
Do we know the contents or subject matter of those communications?
No. When we deposed M&D, they said, yes, we had those conversations, but we don't recall the substance of any of those conversations. However, we can tell from the cell phone records that they were repeated and that some of them, including one well after midnight before the accident, lengthy. I believe it was 10 or 12 minutes long. So it obviously involves something other than simply, here's where you're supposed to deliver fracking sand. Furthermore, M&D, if it was acting solely as a broker, as M&D claims it was, it would have been required to maintain numerous records, which it did not maintain. Now, the second main source of facts from which we believe there's substantial evidence that M&D was, in fact, the carrier, or from which it could be inferred that M&D was the carrier, arises from the affidavit and report of the expert John Glennon, which was attached as Exhibit E to the plaintiff's opposition to M&D's summary judgment. We believe it's significant that Judge Burns, over objection, admitted the affidavit and the report into evidence in his order, and that's set out in his order granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment. But having admitted the affidavit of Mr. Glennon and Mr. Glennon's attached report, Judge Burns then simply disregarded all of the facts and opinions that are, other than the predicate facts about where the truck was loaded and where it was headed and things like that. But Judge Burns simply disregarded all of the facts and opinions to the effect that M&D was, in fact, the carrier.
Are these legal conclusions to which you refer, or factual conclusions?
They're both, and they're application of law to facts. They're also explanation of how the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act and the regulations promulgated pursuant to apply to these facts.
So is there a legal question you think that the trial court got wrong?
Yes, I think so.
And how would you structure the legal issue?
But let me go through some of those, if I could, that I think are contained in Mr. Glennon's affidavit and the report. First, Mr. Glennon, in his affidavit and report, explains the scope and purpose of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act and the regulations, and then explains in detail how they apply to these facts. And to answer your question.
Well, let me fast forward just because I think you got the yellow light going now. the issue of law is customarily decided by the court, but not by folks telling the court.
Certainly.
Okay, so. So for what it's worth.
Certainly, Your Honor.
What facts are in dispute?
I don't think there are any facts in dispute, and I think that's what Judge Burns got wrong.
It's the interpretation of those facts and the application of the law to those facts.
Yes. He took the facts that showed M&D was a motor carrier, and he just disregarded those facts. He didn't distinguish them except for one about the bill of lading. He simply ignored them. So he didn't view them in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs. Facts about M&D's exclusive right to use the truck, facts about M&D's treatment of contract as a lease agreement, the fact about M&D accepting the responsibility to transport the load, thereby binding itself to do so. Facts about M&D dispatching the truck and driver, he simply ignored those. Facts about infer that M&D had the right and exercised that right to control Mr. Johnson's actions on this particular load. The facts contrary to the conclusion that M&D was operating as a freight broker and so forth. So once those facts, once those factual predicates were laid, which they were in our, the evidence we introduced into the record, then we believe Judge Burns simply got it wrong as to whether or not M&D was acting as a carrier or as a freight broker. Time is up. Are there any further questions from the court? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wackel, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, our office represents M&D Trucking LLC. And a little bit of factual background in this case, M&D at all material times acted in two capacities. On the one side, M&D was a federally authorized motor carrier. On the other side, M&D was a federally authorized broker. Now, with regard to the broker side, the evidence on appeal shows that M&D had to obtain a separate license to be a broker. They had to obtain a bond to be a broker. They also had to obtain permission from the Department of Transportation to add what the letter B to the end of their motor carrier number, which shows that they have dual authority to also act not only as a motor carrier, but also as a broker. With respect to the broker division, what M&D sought was federally authorized motor carriers that could haul loads from point A to point B. With regard to the particular loaded issue, M&D hired Turbo Turtle as its motor carrier. Turbo Turtle selected the trucks.
And what hat was it wearing? what hat was M&D wearing when it hired Turbo Turtle?
Broker. And that was the understanding of Turbo Turtle as well. If you look at the broker carrier agreement, which I believe is Deposition Exhibit 9-2, Exhibit 1, Turbo Turtle and M&D's relationship is laid out and spelled out in a manner of broker carrier, with broker following every part where M&D would fill in. With regard to the truck and trailer, that truck was selected by Turbo Turtle. They had three or four, I believe, based on the evidence in the record. That truck bared Turbo Turtle's logo, both on the tractor and on the trailer. It listed their name on the tractor and the trailer, and Turbo Turtle's Department of Transportation number was listed on the front side door of the tractor.
Who was the owner of that vehicle?
Turbo Turtle.
Who hired the driver?
Turbo Turtle. And in fact, in the load sheets that are part of this record on appeal, Mr. Johnson, who was the driver, lists his employer in the load tracking sheet as Turbo Turtle.
The appellants allege that that agreement was actually a lease agreement. What's your best argument that it's not a lease agreement?
Twofold. One, in appellant's brief, they never acknowledge that there's also a broker carrier agreement. Okay? They only focus on the dispatch agreement, which they refer to as a lease agreement. There are two separate agreements. With regard to the lease portion, the evidence on appeal shows that it was in fact Turbo Turtle that was leasing its tractor and trailer to Johnson and collecting payments from Johnson for that lease. With respect to whether the dispatch agreement could be interpreted as a lease agreement, under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, I would argue that it cannot. Here's why. Section 49 CFR Section 376.12C states in part, with regard to leases, there must be a lease in writing that shall provide that the authorized carrier lessee shall have exclusive possession, control, and use of the equipment for the duration of the lease. The lease shall further provide that the authorized carrier lessee shall assume complete responsibility for the operation of the equipment for the duration of the lease. Those were all requirements that were unsatisfied with respect to the relationship of M&D Turbo Turtle and Turbo Turtle's tractor trailer. Now, while it has been argued that that agreement, the dispatch agreement, can be construed as a lease, it can't be construed as a lease under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, and that's what appellants are using to hopefully impose vicarious liability in this case.
Well, that's the object of the argument.
Correct. Now, following the accident, obviously, as we're here today, the appellant sued for a couple of causes of action, including vicarious liability. With respect to vicarious liability, we relied in our brief on Kine versus Hobbs. In the Kine case, the court looked at 10 factors as to whether there's an independent contracting relationship or an employment relationship. In Kine, the court looked in particular as to the amount of control that one had over another. And in that case, the court found that Hobbs didn't have sufficient control over the hauler. Rather, Hobbs' concern led to solely confirming that the cattle were hauled from, I believe, Valentine to somewhere in eastern Nebraska, as he was required to ensure happened. Like Hobbs in our case, M&D was only concerned with making sure that its load of fracking sand got hauled from Genoa, Nebraska to Blackwell, Oklahoma. M&D did not control the stops of driver Mr. Johnson. They didn't control the route. They didn't control, they didn't pay either Turbo Turtle or Johnson in a manner that would be indicative of an employment relationship. Rather, the payment went as followed. M&D would take a percentage of gross. They would send the remainder of the payment to Turbo Turtle. Turbo Turtle would take a flat fee, and then Turtle would send the remainder to Mr. Johnson, who would then reimburse himself for his traveling expenses and keep the remainder as a profit. I would argue that that's consistent with an independent contracting relationship. Now, with regard to the certain exceptions to the rule of an independent contractor not being liable as presented in Kine, particularly the one where there's a statute or a rule that imposes a duty, such as the FMCSR, we would argue that that can't apply to us in this case because at all times we were a broker, as we've previously stated. And in the Harris case, the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit opinion, the court said you must look at the particular transaction giving rise to the liability, not to other transactions which the particular entity being examined also engages in. In this case, while M&D engaged in motor carrier activity, with regard to the subject fracking load that led to the awful accident in this case, M&D was at all times acting as a broker.
Do you think there's any facts in dispute?
No.
That matter, that are material?
But I think all facts have been resolved in a timely manner. With regard to the negligent hiring claim, because there was an independent contracting relationship, M&D's duty solely related to hiring, using reasonable care and hiring a competent independent contractor. M&D's independent contractor in this case was Turbo Turtle. And it should be noted that M&D did its due diligence by making sure that Turbo Turtle carried the adequate insurance. And M&D occasionally over the course of their relationship verified that Turbo Turtle had a valid ongoing running Department of Transportation number, which shows that it was federally authorized to carry loads that M&D would broker over to Turbo Turtle. And from 2012 until August of 2014, the subject accident, Turbo Turtle hauled hundreds of loads for M&D without incident. So from M&D's perspective, it did its due diligence in hiring an independent contractor. And because Johnson, Mr. Johnson, was a driver of Turbo Turtle and Turbo Turtle's employer, it was Turbo Turtle's responsibility to do a background check on Johnson to make sure that Mr. Johnson was appropriately supervised, hired, etc. M&D never had a contractual relationship with Mr. Johnson. Therefore, M&D had no duty as it relates to the negligent hiring, if there was any, of Mr. Johnson. You also note that we filed a cross-appeal in this case. That cross-appeal is solely directed at the vicarious liability claim. The vicarious liability claim is based on M&D being vicariously liable for Turbo Turtle and or Mr. Johnson's negligence.
Excuse me, so what are the, is it settlement and release? What does that inform us of?
What that says is in the event this court decides that in some shape or form M&D could be vicariously liable, M&D was a principal of its agents, Johnson and Turbo Turtle. And because the appellants released Mr. Johnson and Turbo Turtle, that operates as a release of their principal M&D. Now, there's been some confusion as to whether the Nebraska Comparative Negligence Act may have altered that rule. The McCurry case by this court stated that it's possible but undecided and did not take the opportunity to decide in that opinion because it was unnecessary. However, in State Tort Claims Act cases since that time, which the Nebraska Comparative Negligence Statute applies, the court has stated in those opinions, and we cited it in the brief, that if liability is solely vicarious, release of the agent still releases the principal. And Nebraska's jury instructions are still tracking that as we speak, as we cited in our brief. If no further questions, that's all I have, and I would ask that the court affirm the order. Thank you
very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That takes us to